1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
Fanacek rules, it's the best fucking podcast. Stephen J. Cannell is next on Fanacek. S3E5, it's gonna blow your mind. Da 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 da. Shooby dooby dooby doo. S3E5 of the check. That's a cool way of saying Fanacek. I'm trying to make that work. Support me in that. I'm on vacation right now, folks. I'm at the beach, but I'm still creating content because I love the show that much. I'm obsessed with TV that much. And I really, really wanted to talk about the life and career of Stephen J. Cannell that much, which is why I'm doing that. So I'm holed up here at the beach. My family's getting ready to go out, but I'm like, no, I'm going to go sit in a closet and talk about Stephen J. Cannell. So why don't we just dive right in? So Stephen J. Cannell, man, if you watched TV at all in the 80s and 90s, you know this guy's work. He's a legend, an all-around nice guy. He was born February 5th, 1941. He died September 30th in 2010. Complications from melanoma, 69 years young. That really sucks, man. But he had some more work left in him. He actually started his career as a screenwriter, then created and co-created dozens of shows from the 70s to basically through the 90s, really. He was born in LA. He's raised in Pasadena. His father owned a very successful interior decorating business. And after college, that's where Stephen J. Cannell worked. He worked in the family business for several years after college before selling his first script. He sold it to Universal. Then he was hired by Universal Television, which is, you know, essentially the TV division of Universal Studios, and his career was underway from there. He would eventually start his own company, which was Stephen J. Cannell Productions. It was right there on Hollywood Boulevard, and it would later be he'd later be a co-owner of the distribution company Televentures. And again, if you watch TV at all in the 80s, you know the phrase or the name Televentures. It was basically a big syndication distributor. Later, Televentures became Cannell Distribution Company. So I'm guessing this guy made a lot of money in syndication. He created, co-created, nearly 40 TV series, mostly crime dramas. More than 450 episodes and produced over 1,500 episodes. I mean, think about that. He scripted more than 450, and he was involved in producing over 1,500. He's also written 18 novels, by the way. We're not going to focus on that because we are really looking at his TV career. He was a good dude. He was married to his high school sweetheart, stayed married to her. They had four children, two girls and two boys. His son, Derek, died tragically at the age of 15 when a sandcastle he was building at the beach collapsed and suffocated him. Yikes. And I'm actually at the beach. Like I said, I was sitting on the beach yesterday telling my in-laws this story, you know, basically like shocked. I was like, I never heard of anything like that. Well, they had, you know, they grew up in the Jersey Shore, and they do know of a child who died suffocating while building a sandcastle. So I guess that's a thing. Anyway, Stephen J. Cannell, you know, he also suffered from dyslexia. And he was very vocal about that disability and how he overcame it. So he did a lot for the dyslexic community. One of my fondest memories as a kid of watching TV was his vanity card. And we, of course, we talked about vanity cards in the last episode with Chuck Lorre. But basically his vanity card was him seated at the typewriter. He was typing something, then pulling the paper out, throwing the paper kind of floats to the ground and it turned into a C, which was his logo for Stephen J. Cannell. And I can't tell you how many times I saw that. And just, I don't know, it gives me a warm feeling. Reminds me of watching TV as a kid. And TV when I was a kid was basically my best friend, sadly. He has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He is an Emmy winner, a Life Career Award winner, Edgar Allan Poe Award nominee, a Laurel Award for TV writing winner, WGA Award winner. And more importantly, he wrote an episode of Columbo, which we'll talk about. He's a hell of a guy, a TV legend, a hero of mine. He's Stephen J. Cannell. And we're going to dive into his career. 82 writing credits, 83 producing credits. His first writing credit is two episodes of Ironside. So that show ran from 1967 to 1975. I'm going to do a quick, let me pull out my phone here. Can't do the episode without my phone. So again, Ironside, 1967 to 1975, 195 episodes. Stephen's episodes were December of 70 and February of 71. Are you not familiar with Ironside? Well, I'll read you this synopsis. Wheelchair-bound detective Robert T. Ironside battles the bad guys on the streets of San Francisco. But he doesn't really battle them on the streets because, again, he's in a wheelchair. But starred Raymond Burr. This was pre... Oh gosh, what was the other show Raymond Burr did? They were so famous. Oh, Perry Mason, right? So he was the OG Perry Mason. Ironically, Perry Mason was recently remade by HBO. I think it's still going on, heading into another season. But Ironside was remade as well with Blair Underwood in 2013. I was at Blair Underwood's funeral. How about that, folks? Not his real funeral, because of course he's not dead. But I was an extra once when I was getting my acting career going. What the hell was the name of that show? I think I talked about it on the podcast before. In Treatment, HBO show called In Treatment. Blair Underwood was a character, and I believe he was a Navy pilot, and his character died. And the scenes I was in was at his funeral, and I'm pretty sure I swiped one of the funeral cards. I think I've got it in my box of memorabilia from my acting days. But anyway, that's my Blair Underwood story. That's how Stephen J. Cannell got to start with two episodes of Ironside. Now, let me explain how this episode is going to work, because I cannot go through every credit. It's just too much. I mean, Stephen J. Cannell was really prolific. So I'll hit the highlights and I'll try to tell a good story while I do it. But I don't want any of the emails or the Facebooks where, hey, you missed this and how come you didn't talk about that? I get that shit all the time. Look, folks, I'm not an expert. I'm just a guy who has a fan of Czech podcast because he liked the show Banachek and other TV shows. So get off my back. Anyway, after his episode of Ironside, right, it didn't take long for him to hit his stride. He actually got lucky. I mean, he lucked out. He was at the right place at the right time with the folks from Adam 12. So they needed an episode written ASAP, basically. I think there was like a 48-hour turnaround on Adam 12. They needed an episode. Cannell was right there. He said, I'll do it. And he did it well. He did it in less than 48 hours. He did a good job. And he did it cheap, which is probably the most important thing. So he ended up writing 49 episodes of Adam 12. Let's talk about Adam 12. They remade this show later, which I'll talk about too. Two regular police officers patrol Los Angeles. Well, if that synopsis didn't grab you, I don't know who wrote that. It ran from 68 to 75, 174 episodes. Starred Kent McCord. And Martin Milner, remember him? He was George Maharis' sidekick in Route 66, or Route 66. That's S1E2 of Fanacek. Go check that out. It did a lot of crossovers, Adam 12 did, with the paramedics from Emergency, which I think is cool. I really like the show Emergency. I think I mentioned recently, I almost bought an emergency lunchbox. I think it would have been like $300 on eBay, and my wife would have shot me. Although, actually, she probably wouldn't have known. I could have told her it was $40. She would have believed me. But anyway, I liked that show, and they did a lot of crossovers with Adam 12. It was considered very authentic, which was very important to Jack Webb. So Jack Webb was the exec producer. He also exec produced Dragnet and Emergency, Heck Ramsey. He was really into authenticity, so that was important to him. Adam 12 came back later, like I said. It was the new Adam 12 in 1989, and it starred Ethan Wayne, which was John Wayne's son. And I remember this, they were marketing the hell out of that. Like, that's supposed to, I don't know, you know, give it some level of, I don't know, you know, that was like their big thing, though. John Wayne's son is in it, and I don't think he ever did a whole hell of a lot after that. But anyway, that's Adam 12. So, you know, again, he wrote 49 episodes of it. So now Cannell is like a working writer. He's in the game. What's up for next for Mr. Cannell? Well, the December 16th, 1973 episode of Columbo from season 3. It's called Double Exposure. And what I love about it, it's a Bob Culp episode. So Robert Culp, I always thought it was two episodes. I was wrong. The check. Remember, I'm trying to make that work. instead of Fanacek, the Czech. The Czech was wrong, man. I always kind of clocked Robert Culp twice in Columbo episodes. Turns out there was a third one. I didn't realize it. And it was this one, Double Exposure. I'll read the synopsis. A self-styled motivation research specialist uses subliminal cues to commit a murder. Lieutenant Columbo is on the case. My guess is Columbo busted that shit. So again, Peter Falk is Columbo. Robert Culp was Dr. Bert Keppel. Dr. Bart Keppel. He was the killer. And I'm going through the cast and something jumped out at me. So now we're going to go on a tangent, a Czech tangent. So Danny Goldman was in this. He played a press photographer. I've met Danny Goldman and it's kind of a weird story. So Danny Goldman was an actor, not a terribly successful one. I believe though his big claim to fame is he was in Young Frankenstein. Well, as an older gentleman, he was a very, very prominent casting director, specifically for commercials. So when I was a young actor trying to break into the biz, I'd go to these casting director workshops. I think I've talked about them before. And it was really a way for casting directors, kind of like a side hustle. They'd make money doing these workshops, but it was also a way to get in front of them. And they would talk to you about, here's what we're looking for when we call actors in. They'd give you some scripts. They'd have you read it. And sometimes you kind of make an impression on them and you get work, which happened for me. Actually, I ended up ultimately working a bit because of a casting director that I met in a workshop. Well, Danny Goldman, I went to his workshop. He was a commercial casting director, like I said. I'm just saying it because it's part of the story. He was gay, kind of flamboyantly gay. And he hit on me, essentially. So in one of my headshots, I was wearing this brown t-shirt. And he did a whole fuss over it. Where'd you get this shirt? I love this shirt, this designer shirt. Funny thing about that shirt, it was government issued. It was from when I was in the Navy. So you'd wear camouflage. After 9/11, they had everyone wearing camouflage, which was fucking stupid. I worked on submarines, for fuck's sake, and now I'm wearing camouflage. And it came with these brown t-shirts that you wear underneath it. Well, you know, I guess when I was doing my headshots, the stylist person who worked with the photographer was like, hey, this is a cool shirt. And they had me wearing it in some of my headshots. Well, Danny Goldman made a whole big deal of it. Oh, this is a great shirt. And he's kind of hitting on me. He did call me in for a commercial. I didn't get it. And that's my Danny Goldman story. And he was in this episode of Columbo that Stephen J. Cannell wrote. So 1974 now would prove to be a banner year for Mr. Cannell because he created a show and it's a hit show. It's called The Rockford Files. That fucking show ruled, man. I love The Rockford Files. I've talked about it a bunch on the podcast. Let's talk about it, man. The case of an easygoing ex-convict turned private investigator. Jim Rockford, he's played by James Garner. This show was so great. Joe Santos was in this show. Boy, I love this show. Ran from 74 to 80, 119 episodes. He lived in a trailer right in Paradise Cove, Malibu. I've talked about that. I've been there. That parking lot, essentially where his trailer was, is still there. At least it was about 10 years ago. I've eaten at Paradise Cove. I used to always go there and be like, oh my God, the Rockford Files. He was always broke. That was like kind of a thing. Again, he was an ex-con. He was always broke. The people he was working for, they could like rarely pay him. Even though he didn't want to be a nice guy, he was ultimately a nice guy. And we kind of help him out anyway. So many people over the years have tried to option this into a movie. For a long time, there was talk of Vince Vaughn doing it. Not sure what happened there. I think Vince Vaughn's kind of aged out. Well, maybe not. You know, James Garner was an older guy. But anyhow, I'd like to see a movie done of it. I made a note to read the review. Why did I want to read a review? I've been doing that more and more on the cast here. Cast is a cool way of saying podcast. Some people call it a podcast. I call it a cast. Where is the reviews? Let's take a gander. Okay, I wrote, read the first two paragraphs. Okay. As essayed by James Garner, Jim Rockford is one of the best characters in TV history, and I might add, one of the best series. The Rockford Files never ceased to be entertaining during its 70s run and remains so in syndication. There's something comfortable about the show, probably because of the well-drawn characters that we feel we know. If we didn't love Rockford so much, I guess we'd call him a loser, but we love him too much and are pulling for him too much to ever call him a loser. Mm-hmm. He never has any money. I talked about that. He lives in a dilapidated trailer on the beach. He's not married. He was in prison, though he didn't commit the crime and was pardoned. Hell of a way to treat one of our ex-servicemen. He was in Korea. His father, Rocky, was a truck driver and wants his boy, Jimmy, to take it up. It's steady and he might get beat up less. That was another thing. Rockford was always getting beat up. Oh, God, it was such a great show. And guess who wrote 19 episodes of The Rockford Files? David Chase. How about that for some trivia? He would go on to create a little show called The Sopranos. And David Chase will come back later in this episode. How about that? So you'd think he would be like quit at this point, right? Stephen J. Cannell should just quit because not much tops writing for my main men, Lieutenant Columbo and Jim Rockford, right? He should just hang it up right there. But he kept on writing because he's a trooper. He wrote for a bunch of shows I've never really heard of. We'll mention them. Toma, Chase and Switch. They were both mentioned in earlier episodes with Donald Belisario. David Chase also wrote on Switch, by the way. So I told you I'd bring it back. That's it. He then creates another hit show in 1975, Beretta. Let's talk about Beretta. Robert Blake just died a couple days ago. I did a Facebook post about it. The day he died, I was on my couch writing about him. So I was writing this episode, prepping it. Beretta came up. I pulled up on YouTube the theme to Beretta because I always liked the theme song. And by the way, when I was deciding to kind of have a theme written for Fanacek, I couldn't decide which show I wanted to base it on. I ended up going with something kind of based more on the streets of San Francisco. But for a while, I was leaning pretty heavy on Beretta. Beretta's a really cool intro, but I thought it was too busy, and I didn't think a guy on Fiverr could do it that well, which is basically the truth. So I went in a different direction. But this is the second time, really maybe the third time, where I've been researching someone and they died. So I was researching Robert Blake the day he died. I was researching Lisa Loring the day she died. She was the original Wednesday Addams on the Addams Family TV show. And as a buddy reminded me on Facebook, right around the time Clu Gulager died, I was researching him. So if you're not careful, I may research you next, Mr. Listener. So don't fuck with me. But let's talk about Beretta. So 1975 to 1978, 82 episodes. This was a hit show. It was kind of a cool show. Robert Blake was the lead. Let me read about it here. The Cases of Maverick Undercover, New York City Detective Tony Beretta. So he's always in crazy costumes. He's always undercover. We really can't not mention it, right? So Robert Blake, the Oscars were last night. I'm recording this on Monday. The Oscars were last night, and there's already some big, you know, hubbub because they didn't mention Robert Blake in the In Memoriam. Well, the reason why is, you know, he was essentially accused of killing his wife, Bonnie Lee Blakely. Pretty sure he did it. All signs point to him having done it, although she was kind of a piece of shit. So I'll tell the story. So real quick, Bonnie Lee Blakely was his Blakely. I can't remember her last name. That was his second wife. You know, essentially he got her pregnant and she kind of forced him into marrying her. I think he just was from the old school and decided, well, if I got you pregnant, I should marry you. She was a known con artist and conned a lot of men in her life and ruined their lives financially, emotionally. So it is reasonable to think that maybe someone else killed her. There's probably lots of men out there who wanted to kill her. But his story was awful. So they were at a restaurant called Vitello's, where he used to go all the time, Italian restaurant there in Studio City, right outside of LA. It's in the Valley. I think it's Studio City. It used to be something else, and they kind of renamed it Studio City. It's kind of like a city where it kind of rebranded itself. But anyway, they're at Vitello's. They go to leave. They're walking to the car. He realizes that he left his pistol in the restaurant. That's true. So he goes back to get his gun from the restaurant. While he's getting his gun, some motherfucker with a gun, according to him, came and killed her. And she was found dead next to the car. He was acquitted, but a lot of people think he did it. I don't know. But either way, I've been there. I've been to Vitello's, and I've been to the very spot where she was murdered. I did it under the guise. I was dating my wife at the time, before we were married. And I was like, hey, you know, we should go to Studio City and it's real pretty with the Christmas lights. We should take a walk. And we did. And I remember she was like so excited. Wow, how romantic. But really what it was is I wanted to see Vitello's and see the site where Bonnie Lee Blakely was killed. But anyway, so that's Robert Blake. The show Beretta was really cool. It had an awesome theme song. In the early seasons, it's just music. Later on, they had lyrics added that were written by Sammy Davis Jr. And it was really super cool. It was supposed to be like a continuation of Toma, which I mentioned earlier, right? Which was another Stephen J. Cannell show that he wrote. It's supposed to be a continuation of that, but Robert Blake would only play an original role. He wouldn't do a role that was played by another actor, so they created Beretta for him. And the whole thing is he's an undercover cop. He's got a pet cockatoo. It's a whole fucking thing. I don't know. Anyway, that's Beretta. So now Mr. Cannell has arrived. I mean, he's credited. He's got like a couple hit shows under his belt. Beretta was a hip show as well. It was like kind of cool. So now he's cracking in on others, right? So cracking on other shows, right? So he creates City of Angels. It only lasts 13 episodes. So boom, you know, he had a couple hits under his belt and then he gets slapped with some reality. City of Angels lasted 13 episodes. It starred Wayne Rogers, though. He was the original TV version of Trapper John. I've talked about this a lot. I knew his daughter at Second City. She was a nice lady. Wayne Rogers seemed like a nice guy. Then he goes and does some TV movies, which are pilots, which he talked about. And again, he's working with Donald Belisario at this point. He's working with, because they did Black Sheep Squadron together. He's working with Stephen Bochco on Richie Brockham and Private Eye. I love it. I love that it's legends working together. Glenn A. Larson is in the mix there, too. I'm going to do an episode on Glenn A. Larson here soon in the season. But at this point, Stephen Cannell is maybe the highest paid writer of pilots in Hollywood, which is worth talking about because it was written into his contract. So he was actually one of the least paid writers in Hollywood. He had this horrible contract where he was like getting like $600 per episode of writing, right? However, he had it written to his contract that he'd get between $70,000 and $100,000 per pilot, right? And you got to remember, a lot of pilots don't stick. So that could be several hours worth of work where he's making $100,000 and no one even sees it. However, a lot of them did. I mean, he was really known as being like the pilot guru. But let's take a look at some that that didn't work. So he wrote the pilots for the Gypsy Warriors. It was a Tom Selleck show in 1978. The Jordan Chance, a Raymond Burr show in 78. The Chinese Typewriter, another Tom Selleck show in 79. By the way, it was set in Hawaii where he was playing a PI. So how about that? Tom Selleck is a private investigator in Hawaii. Didn't work, but later on it would in the form of Magnum PI. Stephen J. Cannell also wrote The Knight Rider in 1979. Not that Knight Rider. It's not Knight with a K. It's Knight with an N. The Knight Rider. He did The Duke, which is a Bob Conrad as a boxer turned PI show. Stone, which I mentioned in the Belisario episode. Nightside, which was a 1980 pilot that didn't get picked up. 10 Speed and Brown Shoe. So this is worth talking about. 10 Speed and Brown Shoe didn't last long, but it has like this cult following. It's worth yapping about. 1980, it lasted 14 episodes. A con man and an accountant wannabe private eye team up to fight crime. The leads were Ben Vereen as 10 Speed and a young unknown Jeff Goldblum as Lionel Whitney, right? And so I got a quick story about that. So Ben Vereen, famous, you know, dancer, singer, Broadway type guy. In the 90s, one of my best friends was a DJ. And he always kind of coming up with DJ names, right? And he ended up having some success. Like actually, I Googled him, and he's written with lots of famous writers, and he's got some producing credits. But he was a DJ, and I always go with him to the record stores where he'd buy all the records and do all the mixing and all that crazy stuff. And he was changing names, and for a while he was DJ Wolverine. And I guess the idea being that Wolverine's got those, you know, metal claws and would be good for scratching, you know, wicka wicka wicka, all that kind of stuff. Anyhow, so he's DJ Wolverine, which I told him was kind of lame. And then he hooked up with this rapper who was this Asian kid. And the Asian kid was kind of lame. Like, he was not a cool dude. And I was telling my buddy Frank, who that was his real name, not Wolverine, but Frank. And I was telling Frank, I was like, man, Frank, I don't think that guy's very cool. Like, I don't think he's great for your image. And Frank's like, no, he's great. You know, he's in. And the first rap he wrote for my buddy Frank was, it had the line, DJ Wolverine, get you dancing like Ben Vereen. And I was like, there's your proof, Frank. He's fucking referencing like a 1970s tap dancer in your rap. Get you dancing like Ben Vereen. Anyway, that was a long, convoluted story about Ben Vereen and rapping and DJing. But that's 10 Speed and Brown Shoe. Ben Vereen had a hell of a career. He was also Webster's uncle on Webster. So there you go. Other Stephen J. Cannell shows that didn't make it. The Quest, The Rousters. Now remember, let's pause to realize he's getting about $100,000 to write each of these things I just mentioned, right? These TV movies that were never really heard of. Okay, back to the list. Brothers-in-Law, 1985 with Robert Culp. Stingray, 1985. The Last Precinct, J.J. Starbuck. Wait. Let's pause again because I was so caught up in this pilot list that I missed some big hit shows. So he's making bank at this point. And there were some hit shows that I forgot to mention. 1981. The Greatest American Hero. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. This show was awesome. As a little kid, I loved this show. Ran from 1981 to 1983. The Greatest American Hero. A teacher is asked to be a superhero using a special alien suit with powers he can barely understand or control. So basically, the gist of it is William Catt is the lead. He plays this teacher. He comes across like a spaceship. He gets this costume, this outfit to be a superhero, but essentially he loses the instructions. So it's like if Superman had all his things but didn't know how to use the powers. So he'd fly all awkwardly. He couldn't land. He's always crashing into shit. Great show. It was William Catt, Connie Selica, Robert Culp, who I love. I got to get a good autograph Robert Culp picture from my man cave at home. That's if you're listening, I've got a birthday coming up in 9 months. Get me a Robert Culp autograph. Michael Paré was in the show. I always like Michael Paré. He was the lead in Eddie and the Cruisers. I love that movie, Eddie and the Cruisers. Michael Paré should have had a bigger career. He didn't. But getting back to William Catt, he was the lead in The Greatest American Hero. So the first time I ever saw any pornography was kind of because of him. So I'll give you a weird tangent. And this is a dark one. I don't even know why I'm bringing this up. But, you know, it's the check. So I'm going to do it. So when I was a kid, again, there was a lot of years we were so damn poor. We didn't have cable. So we lived in Louisiana for a short period of time. And my parents clearly had a friend who would tape a lot of stuff for them and give them these videotapes. And every videotape would have like several movies on it, right? And I'll never forget, one of the tapes had a movie called House, which is like a 1980s horror movie. It's a really cool movie starring William Catt, the guy from Greatest American Hero. And I just remember I was maybe in fourth grade, which is funny because my youngest is a fourth grader now. I was in fourth grade, so I was probably 9 or 10. And I love this movie House. So one Saturday morning, I wake up before my parents. And I'm like, I'm going to pull out that House movie again. So I pull out the tape that has House on it, and I put it in the VCR. And the first thing that pops up is a close-up of sexual intercourse. It was a movie called I think it was called Let's Get Physical. and it took me a second to realize what I was looking at, because it was like a close-up, like a penetration, right? And I'm fourth grade, I'm looking at this, and what the hell is this? And I just remember feeling like so weird and sick to my stomach and going in that fast mode of like hitting eject and getting the tape out of there. And but anyway, that was some good parenting from my fucking parents. So, and also, who's this guy who's making tapes of movies for them and slips a porno in there? Or was it my parents who requested the porno? Or I don't know. I had so many disappointing adults in my life. Anyway, thank you, William Catt, because of your movie House. It's the first time I saw porno, and it's called Let's Get Physical. So I should Google that, relive my childhood. Anyway, so that's Stevie J. Cannell, The Greatest American Hero, great show. Then in 1983, he creates the A-Team, arguably the coolest intro ever. And dun 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Let me pull it up. The A-Team, 1983 to 1987. It lasted 97 episodes. This show was a beast. Four Vietnam vets, framed for a crime they didn't commit, helped the innocent while on the run from the military. Okay. One quick thing. Coolest intro song ever. I loved it. But also, going back to The Greatest American Hero, that was a great intro song too. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. Because it also led to one of my favorite Seinfeld moments, which is, that's George Costanza's outgoing message. Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Anyway, me and my buddies always laugh about that. Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Where could he be? Believe it or not, George is not home, or something like that, or leave me a message, or I don't know, it makes me laugh. Back to the A-Team. I cannot explain to you how much young Fanacek loved this fucking show. I was obsessed with Mr. T. Now, you got to remember the backdrop. WrestleMania is also going on at this point, the original WrestleMania, of which, you know, Mr. T is in the main event with Hulk Hogan, right? I think it's him and Hulk Hogan, and they're battling against like Rowdy Roddy Piper or some crazy shit. I had a Mr. T doll as a kid, true story. I remember he was on Different Strokes. There was like a crossover episode where he was on Different Strokes. Like, they were filming an A-Team episode in their building. So Gary Coleman, little Arnold Jackson there, you know, he shaves his head and he starts to look like Mr. T. I had Mr. T stickers, which, by the way, I had stickers. Like, that was a thing for me. I was all into stickers. I don't know what the hell was going on. But anyway, loved this show. I loved the fight scenes. There was always that shot in the A-Team, like from below, like it was like a Citizen Kane shot. Like, they clearly like dug a hole in like the floor or something, right? Because some guy would go flying over the camera in every fight, like flying 20 feet. And I've been in some fights in my life, and I've witnessed a lot of fights in my life. I've never seen anyone get thrown 20 feet in the air. Like, every A-Team fight involves someone getting picked up and thrown, like a grown man being thrown 20 feet through the air. But anyway, the A-Team was a beast. I mean, like, that show was such a big fucking hit. By the way, it starred, you know, let's go to the cast. George Peppard, which, if you want to learn about him, the pilot episode of Fanacek was all about George Peppard. Mr. T, Dwight Schultz as Murdoch. God, I loved him. Dirk Benedict as Face. They brought in that chick for a while, Melinda Kalia. She played Amy. Who else was in this? Robert Vaughn, the man from Uncle. That's right. He was in this for a while. Boy, this was a great show. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Okay, now, I missed some other hit shows. 1983, Stephen J. Cannell creates Hardcastle and McCormick. This was a really cool premise, this show. It lasted only 67 episodes, but it's definitely got its place in history. It's like those networks that you come across that are clearly for old people that show lots of old reruns. Well, they'll typically show Hardcastle and McCormick. A retired judge and his last defendant follow up on cases that were dismissed due to technicalities. I always thought that was a cool premise. Then Stephen Jay Canada's Riptide, 1984. I used to watch this as a kid too. I remember when I was a kid, I called this the boat show because they were always in boats and shit. So 1984 Riptide, 84 to 86, 56 episodes. So not a massive hit, but enough to get young Fanacek interested. Another cool premise, by the way. I remember this was cool. The case is of a private investigations agency run by two Vietnam War veterans and their computer geek friend from high school. Armed with toughness, their own helicopter, and the third's technical ability. I just remember them always being in boats. That was like a big thing. Joe Penny was in this. So Joe Penny was one of the leads. He is in my favorite season of The Sopranos is season two. Joe Penny had a recurring role in season two of The Sopranos. He was the guy who was like an interior decorator or something that Carmela kissed and kind of toyed with having an affair with him, and ultimately didn't. And he pulled out because, you know, Tony Soprano, basically the guy's brother, Joe Penny's brother-in-law, was played by Robert Patrick. He was a gambler. Tony Soprano, he owed a lot of money to Tony Soprano so the kid can go to college. There's a whole and as I realize, I'm not telling the story very well. Long story short, Joe Penny was on The Sopranos. There you go. And if you're ever interested, season two is my favorite season on The Sopranos. I love The Sopranos. Okay, now back to more failed pilots by Stephen Jay Candle. 1988, Sunny Spoon, which starred Melvin and Mario Van Peebles, huh? Father and son duo. 1988, Unsub, which was David Soul. He was from Starsky and Hutch. He was Hutch. Richard Kind was also in this. Richard Kind, interesting story about Richard Kind. I think I've told this on the podcast before, not this particular story, but Richard Kind, of course, look him up. He's been in everything. Really funny comedic actor. I remember as a kid really first getting turned on to him, early Carol Burnett stuff, Tracy Ullman show. He was on that, which was an early Fox show. He's, you know, recurring on Curb Your Enthusiasm, been around forever, Richard Kind. He's really good friends with George Clooney. They did a show together early in Clooney's career. And a couple years ago, Clooney did a thing with, I think 7 friends or 13 friends, whatever. He gathered them all at his home and he gave them each $1 million in cash. Cause they were all people that like let him sleep on the couch or supported him. And he wanted to say thank you to them. One of them was Richard Kind. But a funny story about George Clooney and Richard Kind. So George Clooney is known as being a big prankster. And he's on Howard Stern once telling this story, and I thought it was really funny. So one day George Clooney's driving and he sees like this piece of shit painting that on the side of the road, someone's throwing it out. Like they have their garbage piled on the curb, as you do, and they had a painting there. So he pulls up, he grabs the painting, and he brings it to Richard Kind's house, and he's as a gift. He's like, Richard, I got you this. It's really expensive, and I love you. You know, I love you like a brother. Here you go. And Richard Kind clearly doesn't like it, but he's a nice guy, and his great friend George Clooney just gave him this painting, so he puts it up. This becomes a running gag for years, where whenever George Clooney finds out that someone's going to go over to Richard Kind's house, he calls him. He goes, look, when you get there, rave about the painting. He hates the painting, rave about it. So for years, Richard Kind had this garbage painting up on the wall that he hated. And every time people would come over, they'd be like, Richard, where did you get that painting? It's beautiful. And this went on for years to the point that when Richard Kind finally found out about it, he was actually angry. He was really pissed. He's like, for years, I've had this horrible fucking thing up on my wall. I was convinced people loved it. Anyway, I thought that was a really funny gag. And George Clooney kept that going on for years and years and years. But that is Unsub. Another show that was failed, 1989's Thunderboat Row. 1989 was also Top of the Hill, which was another William Catt show. So Stephen Jay Canle, clearly loyal to his actors. Wait, shit, once again, I missed a hit show. How do I keep doing that? I missed a hit show, and it is a doozy, folks. 1987, 21 Jump Street. I cannot convey how much I love this show. I loved it even more than I love the A-Team. This show made me want to be a cop. I was kind of becoming a teenager right around the time this show came out. And it was just like the coolest show. Like Johnny Depp was the coolest actor on the coolest show on the coolest network, right? Fox was brand new, and it was Married with Children, The Simpsons. So Fox was kind of cool, if not broke and cheap. But I'm not even gonna have to read the synopsis. So here's the synopsis of the show. So basically the mayor has like a pet project. He wants to take cops who are young looking and start putting them in the high schools. The idea being if we can catch criminals when they're young, we can prevent them from being worse criminals when they're older. So there's this team of young looking cops. And in the pilot, Johnny Depp is actually a beat cop. His character is Tom Hansen. He's a uniform cop, and his father was a uniform cop, so he wants to be like his dad, and his dad was killed in the field. But he keeps running into problems because he's so young looking, so he kind of gets forced into joining Jump Street, and they have to give him a makeover because he's kind of a square dude, and they make him more hip and give him a cool hairstyle, give him a cool clothes, and that's kind of the thing. So they go undercover in high schools. Tom Hansen was played by Johnny Depp, Doug Penhall, Peter DeLuise, Judy Hoffs was Holly Robinson. Dustin Nguyen played H.T. Aoki. That's Harry Truman Aoki from Vietnam. Oh, it's great. The theme song was great. The theme song was sung by Holly Robinson, and the background vocals were Johnny Depp and Peter DeLuise. So it was like a family effort here for this show. I loved it. Cannot tell you. I mean, I wanted to be a cop because of this fucking show. I used to dress like Johnny Depp. Like, it was insane. Like, stories I'll never tell on this damn podcast. So great show. They eventually brought in Booker. So that's played by Richard Grieco. And the story there is they wanted another good looking guy because Johnny Depp was now becoming a movie star and was on the fence about staying. So the thought was, well, if we bring in another guy with a kind of a similar look, if Johnny Depp leaves, we'll have him. So they brought in Booker, which was a cool storyline. He actually came in the show as Internal Affairs, investigating Tom Hansen, which was played by Johnny Depp. So they didn't like each other. So they had always had a contentious relationship. Eventually, Hansen goes to prison. Mm-hmm. So there's this 3-episode arc where they infiltrate a gang. And long story short, Johnny Depp's character may or may not have killed a cop. So he goes to prison for it. And it's because of Booker. Booker sends him to prison. So it's a whole thing. Now they all hate Booker because he sent Johnny Depp's character to prison. But Booker did the right thing. That's the thing. He was doing it by the book where Johnny Depp wasn't. Whole thing. The next episode is Booker realizing that he might have been wrong. He's like, wait a second. He sees some evidence. So he kind of he pulls a scam to get Tom Hansen out of prison temporarily. And together they solve the crime. They find the real killer. It's a whole thing. But because of that, Booker loses his badge. So Booker is no longer a cop. That's okay, because then he gets his own show called Booker, another Stephen J. Cannell show. This show only lasted 22 episodes. It was not a good show. In this 21 Jump Street spinoff, a rebellious young cop becomes an insurance investigator for a multinational corporation starring Richard Grieco. One thing I do respect about this, they're trying to bring back the insurance investigator thing, because that used to be hip in the 70s. It's a show called Banachek. Ever heard of it? That's a really cool show, also about an insurance investigator. But anyway, that's 21 Jump Street. Season 5 was kind of lame, though. Season 5, Johnny Depp did eventually leave the show, so they brought in some replacement actors. I didn't really like them, but I did buy all the DVDs, and one thing that really sucked, and I think I mentioned this on the show before, all the music is gone. So this was before they optioned like the rights to the music in perpetuity. So a big part of 21 Jump Street was how cool it was, and it had all this cool music. And when you get the DVDs, the music's all been replaced. So it's just not as much fun. I don't know. It's a whole thing. But that's 21 Jump Street. That's Booker. Another thing about Booker, though, Marsha, I didn't know this. I never really put this together until I was researching it. Marsha Strassman was in Booker. She was like the second lead. She was Gabe Kaplan's wife in Welcome Back, Kotter. So there you go. If you're ever at a cocktail party and people are like, hey, who was the second lead in Booker, the female? You can say it was Marsha Strassman. She's from Welcome Back, Kotter. And then you're going to be the hit of the cocktail party. Anyway, now, I love Stephen J. Cannell, and I don't mean to besmirch. I do not mean to besmirch. I never mean to besmirch, but the next several years weren't great for him. Not a lot of highlights. One of the highlights, in fact, is he created Wise Guy, which lasted 74 episodes. I didn't like it. I'm not a Wise Guy guy, but I suppose some folks did. But there's a lot of misses, right? He did The 100 Lives of Black Jack Savage. It only lasted 2 episodes. It's like a Wall Street show. The Great Pretender, Broken Badges, which I've talked about, is one of the dumbest synopses ever. I'm not going to reread it. Palace Guard, The Hat Squad. I talked about that on FanCheck as well. Traps, that was a cop show with George C. Scott and Dan Cortez. Remember Dan Cortez? Dan Cortez was like a young, good-looking, I think he was a stand-up. He had that show MTV Sports, but it was never about sports. It was always like weird shit like rock climbing and stuff or extreme sports. It was never like football or baseball or basketball. Anyway, he was also on a famous Seinfeld episode. He was like that cool guy that George Costanza was obsessed with, and they went, oh, rock climbing, by the way. And then because of George's fuck-up, the guy falls and is like paralyzed or crippled or something. I don't know. Funny episode. Stephen J. Cannell did a show called Cobra. And I was like, okay, I'll bite. And I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but it looks so lame that I had to pull it up. 1993 to 1994, it only lasted 22 episodes. When the traditional judicial When the traditional judicial system fails, there is an alternative, a special government agency that focuses on the victims. Ugh, I don't know, it looks pretty bad. As far as Michael Dudikoff, he was a martial arts guy, and they were really trying to make him work in the 90s. Like, there was a lot of Michael Dudikoff movies in the 90s that were, like, straight to video. Like, they were trying to really push him, and I think America was like, hard pass. Anyway, this show also featured James Tolkien. He was the bald guy from Back to the Future and Top Gun. You can't do anything called Cobra anymore, though. Cobra was ruined by Stallone. He did that movie Cobra about a cop named Cabretti, but he was Cobra for short. I don't know. Marion Cabretti? Mario Cabretti? I don't know. But anyway, all future projects called Cobra have been ruined because of Sylvester Stallone. So, another shitfest by Stephen J. Cannell is Greyhounds, 1994. It should have worked. I'll read the synopsis. So again, it's called Greyhound. It was a TV movie. I think it was supposed to be a pilot. Three old cops are sent back on the streets to clean up crime their own way. And check out this cast. James Coburn. Ooh, he's a bad son of a bitch. Robert Guillaume. Robert Guillaume was Benson. Pat Morita, Mr. Miyagi. Dennis Weaver. Like, that should have worked. That's a cool cast and kind of a cool premise, but it did not work. It did not get picked up. So, and then he did Marker, which was another Richard Grieco show where I guess he owes people money or they owe him money. He's got markers. It's in Hawaii. I don't know. Richard Grieco at this point was past his prime. If he ever had a prime, I don't know. I'm not a Richard Grieco guy, but two things during this time frame with Stephen J. Cannell did kind of pop up that were cool. He created Commish, which I've never seen the Commish, but it's, Michael Chiklis, right? And Michael Chiklis was the lead later on in The Shield, which, boy, what a great show. So he did The Commish, right, where he's like a frumpy guy, balding, overweight, nice guy. And after the Commish ended, Chiklis couldn't get work. So he decided to kind of revamp his whole image. He got buff. He lost a lot of weight. He bicked his head, so he's completely bald. He real square jaw looking guy, and he got The Shield. And let me tell you, man, The Shield is one of my top 3-4 shows of all time. Such a great show. I'm shocked that more people didn't watch it. He won Best Actor the first year of it. But anyway, if you get a chance, go watch The Shield. But that's The Commish, right? Stephen J. Cannell did The Commish. He also did at this time a bunch of Rockford File TV movies, which I was not aware of. Like 4 or 5 of them I saw. So that's kind of cool. I like to go back and maybe find those and see if they're on DVD or something. But then he does Renegade. Oof. Can you believe that this fucking show, Renegade, lasted 110 episodes? I'm sure you guys know Renegade, right? It's Lorenzo Lamas on a motorcycle. Lorenzo Lamas, of course, was the jock that Sandy started dating when she broke up with Danny Zuko in Greece. The show also featured Branscombe Richmond, which I always thought was like Wayne Newton's doppelganger. Look up Branscombe Richmond and tell me he doesn't look just like fucking Wayne Newton. As a matter of fact, for years, I thought it was Wayne Newton. I had no idea it was another guy. I'm not going to read the synopsis of this show because I don't want to waste my energy on it. I don't know. Then it gets weirder for Stephen Cannell because then he's like, or Cannell, because he has silk stockings. Remember silk stockings? Silk stockings, like for those of us with basic cable, that was like our closest thing we got to pornography was fucking silk stockings if you didn't have good cable. I'll read the synopsis. Cassie St. John and Tom Ryan are the new duo in town. It is now their job to catch the killers of Palm Beach. This is a stupid fucking show. It was basically like softcore porn for basic cable. Lasted 176 episodes. Really? It ran from 91 to 99. Really? Like, where was I? Like, how did that fucking show last 8 years? I don't understand it. It had a horrible cast. Rob Estes was in it. Estes, I don't know. He later on did like, you know, fucking Melrose Place. Mitzi Capture, don't know her. Charlie Brill, I don't know. Janet Gunn, Chris Potter, Fred Melamed, I don't know. I can't believe it lasted that long. Now, we move into more like reviving the old material phase of his career, which they all do, because he starts doing some Hunter made-for-TV movies along with the Rockford File made-for-TV movies. So he's bringing back his old stuff. And then in 2010, they made an A-Team movie. So they bring back the A-Team. It's Bradley Cooper and something Rampage Jackson and some other people. I don't know. I'm not going to talk about it. But here's what I know about the 2010 movie. It was the first time my wife and I left the house without our baby. So we had just had a baby in June of 2010. My oldest daughter, and we had like a 3-hour window where my in-laws took this. I mean, she's a newborn. They took her and we went to the movies. We didn't even care what we were going to see. All we wanted to do was just go be alone for like 3 hours. We went to the movie theater and we're like, what's starting now? Oh, the A-Team. And we watched it. I don't even remember what it was about. I just know that I needed to get out of the house because we had this brand new baby at home. We were new parents and it was so hard. And that's 2010. The A-Team comes back. It should have been a better movie. It wasn't. And it didn't really revive the franchise. And then he passed. So in 2010, we lose Stephen J. Cannell. So I want to say rest in peace to Mr. Cannell. But his legacy would live on, because in 2012, Jonah Feldstein, I mean Jonah Hill, that's a callback to the last episode, Jonah Hill would option the rights for 21 Jump Street. And that movie came out in 2012. It was a big hit. I didn't like it. It's not for me because I love the show. The movie was satire, right? The movie was satire. It wasn't original characters. I always thought that they should do more of a traditional TV movie version of 21 Jump Street and bring back the original characters. Of course, Johnny Depp's not going to come back. I get that. But the rest of the actors likely would. And not do satire. I don't know. I didn't care for it. But it brought the franchise back. I'm sure it put a lot of money into Stephen J. Cannell's estate, which is great for his family. Then 2014, they did 22 Jump Street. And that's the last credited work for Stephen J. Cannell. And that's his life and his career. I want to end it with a quote by him. This is from Stephen J. Cannell. "I'm generally a very happy guy because I'm doing what I want. I'm willing to tell you that there are people who are much better at writing than me. I don't have to be the fastest gun in the West. I just love what I do." And I love that. So Stephen J. Cannell, I want to say thank you. Thank you for the thousands of hours of entertainment. Thank you for the A-Team. That was such a big part of my childhood. Thank you for 21 Jump Street. That was such a big part of my later high school years and my formative years as I was becoming a teenager and growing to the guy I'd be. That show had such an influence on me. Just thank you, thank you, thank you for all the work you made growing up a much happier place for me. I want to thank the listeners. Thank you for indulging me in calling me the Check instead of Fan of Check. Thank you for listening to me ramble on about Stephen J. Cannell. If you like the show, leave me a positive review. You can email me, fanacheckpodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter. I'm actually starting to get some traction on Twitter, so I like it. Some lady in the UK wrote to me on Twitter. She retweeted me and said she liked my show, and she's in the UK, like I said, and she's a big Lancer fan, and she liked my Jim Stacy episode. I was like, cool. Thank you for that. That was really neat. But I'm on Twitter, Fanacheck Podcast. Yeah, and that's about it. And you know, if you could do me a favor, I just need you to do one thing. Stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacheck.